From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
You are not going to believe the story that you are going to hear today. Okay, this is going to be different. This is about entrepreneurship. This is about winning. All the things that I believe in are going to be talked about on the show today when it comes to building a business. I'm going to be joined by Caleb Landon. He is an entrepreneur. And one of the things that's so remarkable is how young he got this thing going and how young he is today. And it's his business is excelling. So this is the Mark Haney Show. And on this show, we talk about winning. We talk about building the Backyard Advantage, which is the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. So on this show, we like to share stories or provide education that might get you to think about how you might approach your dream, your journey a little bit differently. And so today I think you're going to be inspired and hopefully will be educated a little bit as well. So Caleb, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You are, okay, so I gave the build up a little bit. Yeah. You are 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a little bit of your background and then, you know, we'll get into the business a little bit, but I think we need to share with you the backstory is really cool.
Yeah, so I grew up in Placid County my whole life, either Newcastle or Loomis, pretty much lived there my whole life. Mom was Placid County supervisor, so very well connected. I've kind of always gone to her events and met people through there. I went to Jessup. I'm still at Jessup, technically. I have one semester left. I went to Forest Lake up in Auburn, so always been in the community. And yeah, I mean, I've always been pretty entrepreneurial, always been pretty frugal, kind of been a go-getter. I'm willing to put in more work to get what I need to get done, so...
Okay, give us an overview of the business so that we can... You're 20 years old now. Give us an overview of this entity that you've started.
Yeah.
And just so... And then I'm going to go back again.
All right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so Landon Capital Group, I started that in February of 2023, so a little bit less than a year now. It's basically just mobile home park investing. So we buy mobile home parks, we will fix them up, infill them, do various tasks like that to basically raise the value, and then refinance, move on to the next deal.
So. Okay. So you are kind of in real estate development at some level.
Pretty much. Yeah. There's a lot of development. So.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting as a 20-year-old to be in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, let's talk about you're 20, you're in this space, but let's go back to, you got into William Jessup, a college, right? It's a local university, very well respected local university, when you were 12 years old.
Yeah.
Now the people that I know that are 12, like my grandkids are around, I've got one 12-year-old. They like to play video games, right? When they think of, doing cool stuff, it has to do with like football and baseball and hockey and stuff like that. You're going to college. How did that happen?
That was a crazy story. I was homeschooled from, about second grade through seventh grade. And my dad's a math teacher. And so he would give me 2 years of math every single year. And so I was basically 5 years ahead by the time I got to high school. And so, or not high school, but middle school. So my mom reached out to Dr. Jackson at Jessup, and he kind of wrote over my story, and he's like, come on in. So I started taking college math classes at Jessup when I was 12, and it was a little weird on campus, just walking around as a 12-year-old, just going to classes. But
did they think you're just somebody's kid or something like that?
I mean,
because
you're
because realistically, he's a 12-year-old. Most of the students there are, let's call it 18 to 24 or something like that. Maybe master students are a little bit older, but what's a 12-year-old kid running around here
for? The teacher had to debrief the whole class at the beginning of the year, kind of saying what's going on. But I have like a reputation at the school. They kind of like all know who I am because I've been there for 8 years now because I've been taking classes since then.
So. Were you, did you have, besides homeschooling and having, you know, being great at math as a young person, were there other like uncommon things that happened growing up that sort of led you to where you are today?
I mean, I bought my first stock when I was like 13 in my parents' brokerage account. So it's like, that's kind of my start with investing was that.
Oh, okay.
And I always had just like a...
What stock was it?
Chevron. And I got like 30% back in a year. I'm like, this is awesome. So kind of started going from there. But yeah, I mean, I've always had that inclination towards business and stocks and investing and all that. And actually how I got a lot of like my startup money was I invested in crypto when I was like 15. Went from 15 to probably 18. I had a job at the Habit Burger in Rockland, and every single dollar I could save, I put it into Bitcoin, and then ended up paying off very well. And so I used all that money starting Lending Capital Group. So,
I haven't shared a story on the air ever. I've only told a few people this story. Really, it never comes up. But so my first job was a newspaper route. I had a little entrepreneurial gig when I was a 10-12 year old, and sold my company and fun. But one of my first investments in stock was a bank stock that was an IPO that did really, really well. And I put like $3,000 in, and it kind of doubled. And I just kept putting more and more money in, all the money I could get. And that gave me a start in buying my first house. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how old you are. I think I was probably 20 at the time, 18, 20. So it could happen. So, mm-hmm, okay. So that gave you at 13 though, that's quite a bit different than 20.
Yeah.
So then what happened? Walk me through this trajectory.
Yeah, pretty much, stuck with crypto and stocks till I was legally allowed to do it on my own.
You just kept taking the money that you made, the profits, if you will, in reinvesting.
Yeah. I saved every penny. I mean, even now I'm extremely frugal. Like I own like one pair of jeans. I own one pair of shoes. I wear these everywhere I go. I mean, pretty much I save every single penny I can, and I put it all back into investments, which I'm glad I did, which paid off now. So
you've got one pair of shoes.
I have like dress shoes, but like I have one pair of daily shoes. So
okay, so that's really interesting.
My fiance hates me for that, but she's always begging me to get more clothes, and I'm like, I don't need it.
So I'm not the world's best dresser myself. Mm-hmm. You look sharp, by the way, mm-hmm, but my wife's always encouraging me to go get new clothes and stuff. But that's an interesting thing that you have that kind of mindset, if you will. Mm-hmm. Where did that originate?
I'm not sure, honestly. I mean, I think seeing how much money I can make with investing just postpones me wanting to buy things. So I'm like, I can spend $100 on new shoes, or I could put that into the stock market, get $200 in 5 years from now. It's like, why would I spend $100 on shoes? I don't need to choose right now. So, I don't really know the root cause that came from. So that always been like that.
So how much of it is, you hear people talk about nature or nurture, right? So, how much of this is like high IQ, you're mm-hmm gifted versus, look, I was just exposed to a good set of values and some good opportunities, mm-hmm, and took advantage of them.
I say it's probably 80% values and like those practices instilled in you when you were a kid. I think 20% of it probably is stuff some people work differently. I mean, some people are good at math. I'm terrible with language and history and all the other subjects, but I was
interesting
inclined towards math and real estate investing and stuff like that. So I think there's a little bit of that. I think the majority of it, though, like anyone can learn this. It's not really too complicated. It's just numbers. So,
all right. Well, let's talk about your business. So what led to the start of the business, and what does the business is in mobile home park investing? Yeah. Maybe give us a little bit more. Let's go a little deeper there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I chose mobile home parks because the previous firm that I worked at, that's what they did. And I basically learned the whole business model. I was actually hired as a financial analyst there, and I would manage my boss's stock portfolio. And so I did all that. And then it got a little bit slower just because the market was kind of flattening, going down. And so he kind of transferred me into the mobile home side, which I learned from up to down, which was great. And so I learned all of it there. And there were a few things that I thought I could do better. And so I just thought to myself, I could do this better. I'm getting paid good here, but I always have wanted to start my own business, do my own thing. And I thought to myself, I'm like, I'm still in college. I don't have a house. I don't have a wife and kids. I don't have any people relying on me. So this is like the one time in my life where I should be taking this step. So I took all my money from crypto, took all my savings, and I basically started Lending Capital Group, which is the mobile home park side. And the reason why I like the mobile home parks is out of all the real estate classes, it's the most profitable if done right. They're very stable, they're recession proof, they have tons of tax advantages, and I'm like, I'm just going to stick here. I've seen single family, multifamily, like apartments, and I think mobile home parks take the win every single time.
Well, there's tax advantages in buying a mobile home park, mm-hmm, am I right? Talk to me about that.
So there's bonus appreciation, which is in the 2017 tax bill, and it's going down every single year, but I think right now it's at 60%. So 60% of the infrastructure on the mobile home parks can be taken as depreciation year one. So let's say you buy $1 million park, put up $300,000 for down payment and closing cost. Or infrastructure can be up to 80% of a mobile home park, which is why it's such a good tax appreciation benefit, because normal housing is not that high at all. So you take the 70%, so you get $700,000 of tax appreciation, and you only put in $300,000. So you're almost doubling your tax appreciation there. It's only 60% of that now because of the tax laws going down, but it's a lot easier to see when you have it out front of you.
I'm tracking with you because I've invested in some mobile home parks, as we've talked about a little bit recently. And so I'm tracking with you. But still, $300,000 down on a property, that's still a lot of money to come up with. Are you using just your money, or are you part of a fund? Have you created a fund?
Yeah. So I'm syndicating with investors. Some family, some friends, some other people, get everyone together, buy up a park. I'm just now in the spot where it's kind of all automating itself. I kind of had to learn how to go with the first deal I went, but that was back in February last year. So
when these people come in and invest with you, do they invest sort of alongside you? You're putting your money in, they're putting their money in, and everybody gets the kind of shares in the tax advantages?
Sometimes I put my own money in, sometimes I don't. I get Atlantic Capital Groups gets 30% of the investment just for doing all the management and acquisition and all that. Right now, we're not charging any fees, so investors get 70% of the cash flow after the refi, and they get 100% of their money back before I touch any of it. So if you give me $100,000, I'm going to pay you back your whole $100,000 before I take any profits. So,
okay.
Yeah.
What's the interest rate environment has changed over the last 12, 24 months? How has that affected things?
I say out of all the real estate classes, I'm the most protected. The last deal I bought back in December, that one was seller financing. I negotiated a 10-year term. It was 3 years of no payments and then 7 years of only 4% IO. So pretty much nothing there.
Wow.
I know the part before that, I got like an 8% rate, which sucks. But I mean, they're already selling at 9-10 caps, so they can cash flow at that prices.
And then is the idea to, hey, interest rates come down in 5 years, let's refinance it, maybe 5% or something like that. I don't know that we can go back to where we were, but you get something that's better. And then at that point, you got a new loan, and what happens to your investors? They get their initial investment back?
Yeah, so we cash out refi in ideally 5 years. Mm-hmm. Investor gets their money back. Ideally, rates will be down by then.
Yeah.
But all my performas, I mean, we could easily support 3-4% higher rates than when we got in at, just so that I have some buffer room there, which is generally like 10-12% we could support. Still getting that same amount back.
Okay, well, let's talk about building the business. So you said, well, that's the land, that's the capital side of things. Yeah. Well, how many sides are there to this business?
So there's Landon Capital Group, and there's LCG Communities. LCG Communities manages all the properties for me, which is also my business. And that one is actually what I do that's different from all these other syndicators, which I employ overseas people to do all the daily management stuff like leasing and tenant complaints and maintenance issues. And you pay them less, which I still pay them very good. I make sure I always pay them above what they're even asking, just because I want to make sure they're paid good in their environment. And so what I could do by doing that is cut the management costs by half compared to these other syndicators, which means more money back to the investor. So right now I have about 6 employees, including the park manager for the 3 properties. And then those 3 basically do all the leasing. They'll take calls. They'll do all of the financing, all that stuff for all homes in there. But
very, very nice.
Yeah.
What's the longer term vision for the company? Because I have to just imagine you're a little kid. You're in college. You know, you get a great job right out of, as a teenager. And so the dream, you're a really conservative person in terms of financial. I imagine there's just got to be this enormous dream associated with this sort of sacrifice, if you will, and drive.
Yeah. I mean, I want to buy mobile home parks. That's the goal. A lot, many as I can, obviously responsibly. But I think when investors look at me, I'm going to be around for a while, I think, compared to some of the other guys. And so I want to build those relationships. I want to build long-term. The goal is never to sell the properties, so I'm going to be keeping them for cash flow. I work with a few people, and they have like funds that they invest with me purely for the point of like having it forever. And so they want to have that returning cash flow every single month.
What are the weirdest things you ever see, like, in a mobile home park, a tenant, right?
There's
a lot. Like, I own some real estate, and, you know, there's tenant challenges. Scott over here helps me, and we end up with weird stuff happening. We got some Airbnbs and some of those type of things, too, and weird stuff happens when you rent property to people, and I can only imagine what happens in a trailer park.
Yeah, I mean, I had an on-site manager who got drunk, this is in Texas. Got his gun, walks outside, like waves his gun around, like telling he's going to like shoot someone.
He's an on-site manager for you.
Yeah. And and then he gets arrested and goes to prison for a few days. And then I'm like, what's going on here? And then he apparently escaped the cops, went down to Oklahoma, and then called me for a security deposit back. And I'm like, I don't know if I can give that back to you. But.
Okay, so that guy's not really an employee. He's sort of like he's a tenant that gets a special rate and kind of helps.
Yeah, he's not my employee. He has no agreements there. He's just like, I'll post some notices for you for some discounted lot rent. So, that was like one of the weirdest ones. I mean, you walk into some of those homes, I mean, it's really bad. I don't know how people live in them. There's dead rats and dead cats all over the place. One home I went into, there was a barrel of just like dead animals inside the home.
Oh my God.
And it's been abandoned for like 2-3 years. It's just, I don't know what's
going
on. The
cleaning crew on that one would be, you sub that out.
Hire junk, junk removal. They go take care of it. And they'll draw over the walls. I don't know what they're doing in there, but it's crazy. It's a lot of weird stuff.
Well, okay, so the business is interesting, which mobile homes and investment. I'm intrigued by all that kind of stuff. So I like diving into that. But I think for our audience, we can learn more about winning from you. So walk me, what do you think the keys to your success are?
I would say persistence, 100%. Okay. There have been multiple times where I'm like, I'm just going to cut it. Like, I can't do this anymore. And I'm glad not. People around me were saying, you got to quit. Like, you got to stop. But I kept on pushing. There are multiple
times. I want to describe both of those. Maybe when you thought about quitting, why did you think about quitting?
Yeah, so like the financing issue with one of my parks was a big one. I basically put up the deposit to get a property under contract. Bank said we're good to go. Day before closing, they backed out. I had to either find a way to get my deposit back, which couldn't be possible, and lose like $30,000, or I had to find another bank, and then luckily got an extension from the seller. But during this whole time, I mean, with one day to figure out all this stuff, I was like freaking out, and I'm like, I can go back to a 9-to-5 job. I can just relax. I can know exactly what's going to happen the next day. But I told myself, I'm like, that's not what you want in the long term. I'm going to hate it if I quit now and look back on all of it for nothing. So I kept on pushing through. And I mean, there's multiple smaller instances of that kind of thing happening where, it's not fun.
Well, you know what? I think most of our, any startup, any entrepreneur can relate to the early setbacks. Because when you first start things, there's, it's tenuous. So like, if this doesn't work, it might not work, right?
Yeah,
so
no
if the first one doesn't work, or the first couple don't work, it might not work. And now, do you feel like you're over the hump now, though? Now that's kind of over the hump?
No, I mean,
no
almost.
Chance there's still a chance you might quit?
I'm not going to quit at this point. But I mean, the initial problems are gone. But even like 2 days ago, someone took $50,000 of parks from me, or homes from me. And then I paid them to put two homes in the property. They ran off with the home, so I'm still dealing with that.
What do you mean? They just got a truck and pulled them away?
Yeah. So it's like things like that happen, and you're like, this is problems to deal with. And
so you're over the hump in terms of like, something that could cause you to just go back to eight. Now, are you over the desire to, I mean, is it fair to say, like, here's how I am. And I think like I would have to go out of business for me to go back and get become a sales rep or something or an analyst of some kind. It would take, a catastrophe.
Yeah. So I'm past all that.
You're past
that.
I'm
good now.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, who told you to quit?
Family member.
Oh.
Yeah. But I'm lucky. My fiance is great. She's very supportive. But we just got engaged like 3 weeks ago. So, But she's
Have there been other people that doubted you along the way?
I mean, a lot of like friends and people online and people that just hear about me. And they're like, why would you do that? But I'd say the majority of people are actually pretty supportive, which is good. I think that does help a lot. Knowing like your parents are on behind your side and people are helping you do it. So I think that definitely helps.
Who, so your dad being the math teacher and getting you, accelerated in that realm, and Jessup, who let's start with your mom and dad. Like, how did they affect things other than they got you into the right schools in terms of Forest Lake Christian and, you know, your dad homeschooling you and getting you good at math? How else did they contribute?
I think they taught me a lot of lessons and taught me a lot of values to hold. Like, no one's going to just save you for no reason. Like, you got to do it yourself. Like, you got to get work done. Nothing's free. I mean, I always had to work growing up. Always had to. I mean, we lived on 10 acres out in Newcastle, and there's always yard work to do. Every weekend I had to do yard work. So it's like, there's always those kind of values they teach you, and honesty and things like that. Just,
I think a lot of our listeners are parents. And so you think about that and how to, we look at America's youth and go, oh, what's up with these guys? They all want to play video games. You know, and we sit back and we, you know, grumble, I guess, if you will, about the way society is changing. And maybe we need to look in the mirror as parents and grandparents, I suppose, as what can we do to help shape the values? And sometimes just going out there and having to work, go outside and do a little work.
Yeah. I think being supportive. Also, I think college is great for some people. I think there's other options in college. I think a lot of my parents and also my grandparents' generation, they are very instilled on college. I think you can learn a lot of things by either interning or shadowing someone or teaming up with a local business owner. Just, I mean, the last firm I worked at, I called them like, I will clean the toilets if it means I will be able to work for you guys. I just want to learn the business. And so that's kind of the mindset I have going to these places. Like, I just want to learn. I think learning as much as you can about as many topics as you can.
Okay, that's an interesting story because you don't hear that much. You know, I listen to Gary Vee or something. He might say something that has some of that kind of, you know, spirit to it where you just go in and get yourself in the game and you'll learn. Don't sit back and do nothing type thing. What inspired you to do the I'll go clean the toilets, you don't have to, almost like you don't have to pay me type thing?
Yeah, I mean, I just thought, as like a business owner, you hire an employee because they're going to make you money. You don't hire them to lose your money. And so my mindset was, I mean, I'm going to call these businesses and say, like, I'm going to make you money. Like, I'm going to work for free. I'll pour back into the business. I just want to learn it.
And that creates opportunity.
Yeah, you just get tons of opportunity.
Because people sit back, and you see it probably with your friends. Like, we hear about it on the news and, you know, and all this. It's just people saying it's tough out there and everything. But if you can go create your own luck.
Yeah. I mean, most business owners, if you have some smarter guy coming to you saying, I'm going to make you money, I'll work for free, like, who's going to say no to that? And it's just a perfect opportunity. And even me, I work with the internship program at Jessup, and I have like my company listed as like one of the internships, but I don't have like any sort of pay there. I have ownership in the parks as like, if you work for me, I'll give you some ownership in some of the parks maybe. But every one of the responses is like, can I at least get $20 an hour? Or can I at least get $15 an hour? Which, I mean, I could, but wouldn't be worth it for me to do that. So it's like, you could have the opportunity to learn and learn the business and make way more money than that. But
you're going to learn more than... So Jessup, obviously, I don't want to... Yeah. Like, I have friends at Jessup. In fact, I sent a message over to Ray Bryant.
Yeah.
He said to tell you hello as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said, you're a really sharp guy and say hi. But you think about what you learn in college. You said college is not for everybody. I didn't go to college. But I learned through hard knocks and through, you know, entrepreneurship and so on. But how much did you learn from Jessup as compared to, you know, working in, you know, working in the other areas?
I mean, I'd say my story's a little bit skewed because I got a job in the industry I wanted to get into and then went to Jessup pretty much. So I kind of already knew a lot of the stuff I was going into Jessup for.
Jessup at 12. Okay, so you just took a math.
I did general ed pretty much until I got out of high school. So
okay.
Yeah. I'm going to graduate this semester at 20, so I'm 2 years ahead.
Okay, 2 years ahead. So you got in, started taking classes at 12, chip away.
Yeah, so I was still in high school and doing actual classes there. So, yeah, but I think college taught me, if I had not been in the jobs I had been before, would teach me quite a bit about the basic concepts like cap rates and just basic things like that. I do think you cannot teach like actually doing it unless you're actually doing it with someone. So I think there's a little bit of aspect of doing an internship or something like that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So the big dream is to have how many mobile home parks? Is there, do you have a number?
I don't have a number. Quantity?
What's it look like? Like a lot of times people say that you can manifest, I believe this, in fact, you can manifest your dream. So we're building a family compound called Haneyville, and I've sort of been dreaming about it for this last several years, and it's in the process of coming true. The Backyard Advantage, we're building that here at the Growth Factory, and I've been thinking about this and dreaming and visualizing it for years now, and finally starting to happen. And I think a lot of it is because I visualized it.
Yeah.
What do you visualize today for your life?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know if I have a number for the amount of parks I want to own. Right now I have three, but I think I'm really like the state of Iowa. If I could buy, maybe the biggest mobile home park owner in Iowa, it's a great place to invest right now for mobile home parks. That's where I have two of my properties, but yeah, I don't really have a number. I just say if I can grow and provide the investment to people, and also I'm huge on giving back. I want to give back like all my money at some point. So that's the goal. Reach that
you
point.
You want to give back all your money?
Yeah, I'm not motivated by the money. I'm really not. Like I really want to give it back to the community. I'm really passionate about, like, homeless, which the land I told you about, and things like that. I'm really not motivated by money at all.
So when you and your fiance are talking about, you know, how great you're going to be and the life that you're going to live, what do you two imagine together? Can you, is it a bunch of kids? Is it, you know, 10 acres like you had with your mom and dad?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's somewhat comfortable life. I mean, kids and then somewhere not in the city. That's the ideal life. I don't want anything extravagant. I think she's on the same page as me there. She doesn't want a huge mansion on 1,000 acres in Granite Bay. But yeah, just average, comfortable life we're fine with. So,
okay. Yeah. And the giving back piece, it's interesting that that's so important. Why is homelessness, it's a major issue. It seems like people are having trouble solving it. Throwing money at it isn't working. How are we going to fix that, and why is that so important to you?
I think it's important. It's one of the few things I could do, like, right here. I mean, there's a lot of causes that go out, which I think are very important, but I think one of the immediate issues is I can go down 10 minutes down the road and find someone is homelessness. Mm. And I'm not sure what the solution is. I don't think throwing money at it's the best solution. Mostly what my side is providing meals. I have in the past, like, gotten their numbers and stuff, and I've gotten them like a phone sometimes, like a prepaid phone, just to be in contact with them. This is when I was back in Colorado for a gap year program, but just trying to integrate them back into society, get them jobs, stuff like that. I have been working with a program in Iowa for homeless veterans, and I'm trying to get them to be housed in some of the communities I have there. So something like that, I mean, that could work. I'm still working on that, but
one of my mantras is entrepreneurs solve the world's biggest problems. Mm-hmm. And because I'm so busy doing other stuff, I haven't thought about, you know, a vision for homelessness. It hasn't hit me the way that obviously it's hit you. But I do think that there's something around privatizing the solution and letting entrepreneurs compete and solve things in a free market. And I wonder about that versus just giving out some meals and throwing some more money out there. Yeah. Do you agree that maybe there's an entrepreneurial solution to even a problem like homelessness?
100%. I mean, if you just look at the money that's been thrown at it in the last 10 years, it doesn't make any sense. You're like, where'd all of it go? And it's gotten worse. So I think there are solutions. I mean, mobile home parks are the most affordable type of living. I mean, you can get a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in Iowa right now for, including lot rent, $600 a month. And that's just not possible in a lot of places. And if I can somehow help with that, I would be glad to. I would be encouraging people to help out with that. So,
That's cool. Mm-hmm. All right. What did I not ask you that is important that we cover? Because this, really, I want to inspire people to think about how to win. Mm-hmm. And so what did I not ask you about that so that you could share more philosophy around winning? Because that's what you do.
I mean, I say get out of your comfort zone. I had days where I worked 48 hours straight. One day over the summer, I literally worked 48 hours straight. Didn't really
48?
48 hours straight. Didn't sleep.
Okay, how many of you guys out there have ever worked I've never worked 48 hours. Yeah. I'm old. I've had all the opportunity in the world to work. I've never worked 48 hours in a row. I've never worked 24 hours in a row, I don't think. Maybe 12.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. Obviously, it's an outlier, but I mean, there's, you got to do things that normal people are not going to do to get ahead. If you work just a normal 9-to-5 job and that's it, I mean, you're probably not going to get as far ahead in most careers than someone who's working on the weekend or someone who's working after work or someone who's doing this kind of thing. So,
So when did you work 48 hours in a row?
That was at some point during summer. That was when the first financing issue happened.
Oh, okay.
And then a huge like legal thing happened with that. It was just a whole mess. And so
it's just like, hey, whatever it takes, all hands on deck. And obviously there are times in our life when that could, you know, we could get that sprung upon us. But the people you were working with at that time, how did they react to you working 48 hours straight?
Mm-hmm. I think it shows a good model. Obviously, I don't expect them to do that. But I think if your boss is working an hour a day doing nothing and he's driving around his Ferrari and then you're working 12 hours a day, just doesn't really show that good of an image. But I think if I can sell them that image too, it probably is a little motivating to them.
Did that create opportunity? So it's motivating to the other employees, which is good for the team.
Yeah.
But how did they respond? Besides, were they?
They told me I was crazy. just go to bed. Just go eat some food. I'm like, I can't really right now. But
I think so one of the things that I've always believed is that when you do things that get noticed, sometimes they're shocking. They're out there. Work 48 hours in a row. It gets people's attention. Mm-hmm. And if you want to create opportunity, one of the first things you need to do is get people's attention. Mm-hmm. I will work for free, work 48 hours straight, whatever it may be. We started a thing at my old company where we call it a full speed attitude. And we started running, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of walking, picture like 70,000 square feet call center, and employees need to get from point A to point B because we didn't have as much technology to move stuff around. So you got to run something over to accounting or so, something like that. We would actually run, and it became infectious. Next thing you know, all the salespeople are running to, if you're gonna go to the bathroom, you jog. You want to go over to accounting and ask a question, you run. And it became infectious, and it sets a mood, a tone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even Tesla's like that. I mean, Elon Musk's story of him sleeping in the conference rooms and stuff like that. It does set a tone. It sets an environment in the office of, we got to work hard. We got to go get it. So.
Okay, so do something that's a little crazy. Mm-hmm. Get yourself noticed. I don't know if that's why you did it or not, but it worked. Obviously, it's working. That's why you got. I mean, one of my teammates saw an article that said 12-year-old, starts an entrepreneurial thing, and it got all of our attention. And I'm hearing the story today because you did something kind of crazy. Started college at 12. What other advice? Okay, so these are good nuggets.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've pretty much got all of it. I mean, you just gotta, if you're gonna have a goal in mind, you gotta go reach it by pretty much any means necessary. It's not gonna fall in your lap. That's kind of the bottom line.
It's not gonna fall in your lap. So, Caleb, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
You've
inspired me. I'm gonna go talk about this with my granddaughter's volleyball game, who is 13, and she's got all kinds of attributes, and she's doing a lot of sports and stuff like that. But as we share what's possible, to me, this is a story about what's possible. And so many times in our life, we sort of set those goals that you're talking about, kind of like middle of the ground or middle of the road, and kind of like what everybody else does and what society says. And maybe we had to throw all that out the window and go, what's possible? What are my capabilities? And then set your dreams and goals around that, and then just start chipping away. And if you do crazy stuff, it might fast track it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I love it. So, Al, thanks for coming on the show, Caleb.
Yeah, thank you.
You betcha. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.